for me growing up, I don't know whether to call it a tool, a resource, an alien. You know, it was a physical presence that was a part of your clique, your crew. That was the radio.
You know, you were just stuck to your radio dial with two fingers on buttons. Pause, record.
You're flipping through the dial, and it wasn't no digital tuning. It was straight fine-tuning, because you might have overshot your situation. You're like, oh, that's static. All right, we good. Hold up.
You know, you could go to school and talk about, did you hear this new song this weekend? Or did you hear what Red Alert did? Or did you hear what Chuck Chill Out did? You know, you bonded with other people who also kind of were drawn to the music.
I'm Elsa Levisseur, and I'm a sustaining member, and I give monthly on the internet. It's so easy to listen to WGXC Accra.
Network, this is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network in sports. There are updates. In updates, there are numbers. In numbers, there are sorrows. In sorrow, there is redemption. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network. This is the news. This is the news. This is the news. This is the network. Network.
On air, in air, waves controlled. On air, in air, channel connection. And the moon turns to blood. A stream runs through. This is the network. Network.
This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network.
And the moon turns the blood. A stream runs through. And the moon turns the blood. This is the network. Network. And the moon turns the blood. A stream runs through. And the moon turns the blood. This is the network.
Hear music and sounds, radio art and melodies, every day from 11 a.m. until 4 p.m. on WGXC 90.7 FM. Weekdays, there is all sorts of local talk, interviews with your friends and neighbors, music from down in the valley, previews of local events and more, weekdays from 4 to 8 p.m. Then stay tuned for WGXC Live at 8 p.m. with live DJs, live events, live broadcasts, and more on the radio at 90.7 FM and WGXC.org. Do you have 17 cents a day to support a platform for many diverse voices to have their say on the local airwaves? Just 17 cents a day, a monthly $5 recurring donation, can help keep local youth on the air at WGXC 90.7 FM. Your monthly sustaining support will keep the airwaves full of music from around the world and around the corner. WGXC needs 500 sustaining supporters to make sure there is one spot on the dial where the community can have access to its own airwaves. Make your pledge today at WGXC.org/donate and do your part to protect an important source of local news, information, and entertainment. With just 17 cents a day, you will do your part to protect your favorite frequency. Become a sustaining supporter today. Go to WGXC.org/donate now.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Blanche Mackey Photography of Craryville, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. Become a WGXC sustaining supporter today. Go to WGXC.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
You have tuned into the WGXC local news update. Go to the WGXC newsroom at WGXC.org for more information about any of these stories. I'm Tom Rowe in Acre. Melanie Lakosovic is reporting for Columbia Greene Media that Greene County lawmakers September 1st learned from health officials that the county is among the hardest hit statewide by the opioid epidemic. Jason Fredenberg, County Director of Community Services and Mental Health, and Laura Churchill, Deputy Director of Greene County Public Health, presented the county's response to the health crisis to the full legislature. Quote, "Unfortunately, Greene County is not doing well with regard to the opioid epidemic," unquote, Friedenberg said. The county was among those hardest hit in the state by the, quote, "opioid burden," unquote, which considers overdose deaths, non-fatal emergency room visits, and opioid abuse and dependence, according to a 2018 data from the State Department of Health. A recent study found that Greene County's opioid burden was 33% higher than the rest of the capital region and 45% higher than the state as a whole. Fredenberg said the number of overdose fatalities in the county has been on the rise in recent years. Quote, "In 2019, there were 9. In 2020, there were 14. And in 2021, as of July 31st, we were already up to 11, so that number is increasing each year," unquote, he said. The number of overdoses, fatal and non-fatal, has also been rising. Quote, "Many people in our community here in Greene County are being affected, and their addictions may have started or been escalated by prescription drugs," unquote, Fredenberg said. Quote, "There is a very high incidence of prescribing dangerous prescription drugs in Greene County," unquote. He said the county is addressing the addiction problem in a variety of ways, with prevention a key action area. Quote, "We don't have a recovery outreach center in Greene County," unquote, Churchill said. Quote, "Stigma, when people feel that they're being judged, they will not seek services, and that's a huge, huge barrier in this county," unquote. The county does not have a detox facility or methadone treatment program. Quote, "We don't even have pain management, so somebody with legitimate pain who needs narcotics, we don't have that service in Greene County, so people sometimes use illicit substances when they are in pain," unquote, Churchill said. She urged the legislators to help destigmatize drug addiction and view it as a chronic disease. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com. Andrea Macko is reporting for Porcupine Soup that residents of Cornwallville turned out to the Durham Town Board meeting last week to express their opposition to the proposed Bosque development project. The meeting was moved to the town highway garage to accommodate the crowd. It was held for the purpose of completing the state environmental assessment form review of the proposed subdivision. Bosque first submitted its plan to the town in November 2020 to subdivide 95 acres that border Strong Road and Cornwallville Road. The project includes the construction of 12 high-end homes and a farming operation. In Durham, the town board serves as the planning board and are therefore charged with following the Seeker Act. As the board began the assessment, considering the numerous questions on the Seeker form, it determined that some aspects of the project had little or no environmental impact. At that point, the crowd became agitated, but town attorney Tal Rapplier pointed out nothing would be finalized that night. Town supervisor Sean Marriott emphasized that public hearings will be scheduled before any final determination on the project is made. Multiple audience members talked over one another, and Marriott reminded residents that the town is, quote, following the process, unquote, that the state has put forth for us. He told the crowd that nothing was being accomplished by arguing, quote, "We cannot act like this," unquote, Marriott said. Quote, "This is getting us absolutely nowhere. We will work through this together, but we can't treat or talk to each other like this," unquote. Since the project was first presented, public comment has been largely in opposition of the development. Dozens of no subdivision lawn signs are posted throughout the town. Concerns from community members range from environmental and traffic impact to the effect the development will have on the historic character of the hamlet. The Seeker review was not completed during the four-hour-long meeting. It will continue on September 7th. Read more about this story at porcupinesoup.com. Jeanette Wolfberg is reporting for the Columbia paper that the Hudson Board of Education is making plans to raise the pay rate for substitute teachers, aides, and staff for the first time in 5 years. Substitutes are hard to find, and Hudson must compete with other districts that may pay substitutes a higher rate, District Human Resources Manager Rachel Rizzetto told the board at its August 16th meeting. Rizzetto said the substitute list is already, quote, not long, unquote, and gets shorter whenever someone leaves the list to take a permanent position, such as a teacher's aide. And the district needs substitutes in all areas, she said. Board member Mark DePace asked about proactive steps to recruit substitutes, and Rizzetto replied that the district had recruited at libraries, job fairs, and Columbia Green Community College, especially pre-COVID. Board member Stella Graham compared the proposed hourly pay for some substitutes with that for permanent employees in the same position. Rizzetto said that she and business administrator Jesse Boehm would calculate the hourly wage for full-time employees if benefits were included in the pay, particularly with teachers, aid, and food service. As for the district reopening this month, conditions will be closer to pre-COVID normal than last year. Students will attend in-person instruction 5 days a week. There will be no daily temperature checks or Wednesday closings for deep cleaning. Students with symptoms will have to stay home, but other people who live with them will no longer be automatically quarantined. Buses will run at full capacity. The physical distancing requirement in school buildings is reduced from 6 to 3 feet, with the exception of gym and music classes, where it will remain at 6 feet. Masks are mandatory on buses and inside school buildings. Staff and visitors must wear masks indoors as well. Note, Graham is an active WGXC volunteer on-air programmer. Read more about this story in the Columbia paper. And read more about any of these stories in the WGXC newsroom at WGXC.org.
After years of virtual collaborations across the Pacific Rim, the duo Alula produced their Akari album in a Tokyo studio. On the next Deep Threes, we'll hear the results. Plus music from Enrico Rava, Nikki Costa, Todd Oxford, James Dunham, and Tan Dunn. Deep Threes, music beyond boundaries for a digital world.
Tune in to Deep Threes after the noon news on Monday at WGXC 90.7 FM.
The National Weather Service in Albany predicts a 40% chance of rain on Sunday with cloudy skies in the forecast and a high around 67 and a low around 59 Sunday night with more rain there in the forecast and more rain possibly on Labor Day on Monday. There's a 30% chance of showers, possibly a thunderstorm after 2 p.m. with a high near 72 and a low around 54. Tuesday should be sunny with a high near 73 and a low around 56. You're listening to the radio, WGXC 90.7 FM. Acre, Catskill, Hudson, radio for open ears.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Rhodes Adler of Hudson, New York. Sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about Creative Community Radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You, too, can become a WGXC sustaining supporter by investing in community radio every month. Go to WGXC.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
You got to try something.
You got a job at the radio station?
Oh, great, that place. It's dark and dirty and has, like, what, those three weirdos who work there?
Welcome, radio listeners. You're listening to Bound by Books Youth Radio on WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, and Hudson. Listener-supported radio for open ears. I'm Emily. I'm the director of the Hudson Area Library, and I'm from Hudson. And I'm generally joined by my young friends, Amelia, Mashuda, Fahim, Fatia, Georgia. But today, everyone is busy with end of summer, getting ready for the school year. Some of them are already back in school. So it's just me today. And so I'm going to take this time to talk about some upcoming books that I think sound very exciting. And these are all books written for kids or teens. And I will read you the descriptions for them. But they're all books coming out this month, either this coming week or the next. And some of them are by authors I've read before, and some are by authors that would be new to me. So I will start with a young adult novel for teens called White Smoke by Tiffany D. Jackson, who I've read several books by, and I know our friend Fahim has read some books by Tiffany D. Jackson as well. And this one is called White Smoke. It's out on September 14th, and it is compared to The Haunting of Hill House meets Get Out. So fans of those books or series or movies might find this interesting. Here's the description. Marigold is running from ghosts. The phantoms of her old life keep haunting her, but a move with her newly blended family from their small California beach town to the embattled Midwestern city of Cedarville might be the fresh start she needs. Her mom has accepted a new job with the Sterling Foundation that comes with a free house, one that Mary now has to share with her bratty 10-year-old stepsister Piper. The renovated, picture-perfect home on Maple Street, sitting between dilapidated houses surrounded by wary neighbors, has its secrets. That's only half the problem. Household items vanish, doors open on their own, lights turn off, shadows walk past rooms, voices can be heard in the walls, and there's a foul smell seeping through the vents only Mary seems to notice. Worse, Piper keeps talking about a friend who wants Mary gone. But running from ghosts is just a metaphor, right? As the house closes in, Mary learns that the danger isn't limited to Maple Street. Cedarville has its secrets too, and secrets always find their way through the cracks. Ooh, that sounds nice and creepy. I'm not sure if I'll get to that one this month, but I do like reading a little scary story in October in honor of Halloween, so maybe this will be one of my October reads. But again, that's White Smoke by Tiffany D. Jackson, and it's out on September 14th. I might have a couple creepy-sounding ones this month to share. I'll share another one that sounds a little creepy, too. This one is called The Monsters of Rookhaven, and it's by Padre Kenny, and it comes out September 21st. And I've never read anything by this author. It says it's perfect for fans of Jonathan Oxier and Victoria Schwab, who are both very popular authors. And here's the description for this one. Mirabelle is part of a very unusual family. Between Uncle Bertram transforming into a ferocious grizzly bear and Aunt Eliza's body being made entirely of spiders, it's safe to say they are an extraordinary lot. To the human residents of Rookhaven Village, the family is a threat. So long ago, a treaty was reached between them. In return for sundries and supplies, the monsters won't eat the townspeople, and an invisible glamour was set around the perimeter of the manor to keep strangers out. But the glamour serves a second purpose, to keep Mirabelle and her family hidden from those who would do them harm. When two orphans, siblings Jem and Tom, stumble upon a tear in the magical field and open a door that was meant to stay locked, Mirabelle and her family are put in grave danger. A very real monster has locked onto their scent, and he has a hunger for their kind. At turns chilling and thought-provoking and stunningly illustrated, The Monsters of Rookhaven explores difference and empathy through the eyes of characters you won't soon forget. That sounds like fun. This one's gotten really good reviews, so I'm very interested about it. The pictures look really cool, too. They're black and white, so use lots of light and shadow and have some like creepy imagery since it's a book about monsters. Very pretty. So I look forward to checking that one out. And another book coming out, probably less scary or less creepy, but also I'm assuming to have very beautiful illustrations throughout, is the new book by Brian Selznick called Kaleidoscope, which is coming out September 21st. And Brian Selznick is the author illustrator of The Invention of Hugo Cabret and Wonderstruck and The Marvels. And so this is the latest from him. And here is the very short description. A ship, a garden, a library, a key. In Kaleidoscope, the incomparable Brian Selznick presents the story of two people bound to each other through time and space, memory and dreams. At the center of their relationship is a mystery about the nature of grief and love, which will look different to each reader. Kaleidoscope is a feat of storytelling that illuminates how even the wildest tales can help us in the hardest times. So I know very little about this book, because that's a very short description. but Brian Selznick's work are always just beautiful. They're like works of, I mean, all books are works of art, but his books are just so beautiful in the way they incorporate illustration, and his style of art is really special. So I'm really looking forward to that one. Kaleidoscope, coming out September 21st from Brian Selznick. And if you haven't checked out his other books, please do. They're at the library. You can borrow them. All right, next up, I want to share another one that might be a little creepy. I'm not totally sure. Looks like it could be. It's called Beasts and Beauty, Dangerous Tales by Soman Chainani and illustrated by Julia Iredale. And here is the description for this one. Oh, this is coming out September 21st. You think you know these stories, don't you? You are wrong. You don't know them at all. 12 tales, 12 dangerous tales of mystery, magic, and rebellious hearts. Each twists like a spindle to reveal truths full of warning and triumph, truths that free hearts long kept tame, truths that explore life and death. A prince has a surprise awakening. A beauty fights like a beast. A boy refuses to become prey. A path to happiness is lost, then found again. New York Times bestselling author Soman Chainani respins old stories into fresh fairy tales for a new era and creates a world like no other. These stories know you. They understand you. They reflect you. They are tales for our time, so read on if you dare. So that sounds like a very fun book for people that like fairy tales with a little twist, which I know some of my co-hosts are interested in that type of tale twisting. And another one that I think some of my co-hosts will be very excited about is a book called Bad Sister by Charisse Miracle Harper and Rory Lucy, illustrated by Rory Lucy. And it's a graphic novel, a middle grade graphic novel that is coming out on September 14th. And it's a full color illustrated novel. Pictures are quite lovely, very colorful. And this is the description. Meet Charisse. She's energetic, helpful, a model pet owner, and full of inventions. But she's also a bad sister. When she goes too far and breaks little brother Daniel's tooth, can she redeem herself? Is an accident really an accident if you could have stopped it? But most importantly, what does it mean to be a good sister? I'm not sure what it means to be a good sister, but I know that I have one. And actually, I once caused an accident with my sister where I was playing Wheel of Fortune on a computer when I was very little, and I was cheating by playing all three characters and having one get all of the right answers. And my sister didn't like me cheating, even though it didn't affect her at all. And so she was messing with me and trying to hit the letter Z and all these letters that would not show up in the clues. And I banged her hand away, and in the process she broke her finger. And she was such a good sister that she told my parents that she fell off of her chair and broke her finger. They do know that that's the truth now, but at the time that was the story and we stuck by it. But anyways, so this book sounds lovely. It is a memoir, as you may have guessed by the fact that the author's name is the same as the characters. And I like a good book that focuses on siblinghood, even if it doesn't, you know, quite relate to my exact relationship with my sister. There's always something that you can relate to in a story about siblings. At least I've found that. But it seems like it's some of the reviews say that it would be popular for people who like Jennifer Holmes' Sunny Side Up series or Raina Telgemeier's Sisters, which is also another graphic novel memoir about a relationship between two sisters in that case. Although in this one, it's a sister and a brother. But that's Bad Sister by Charisse Miracle Harper, coming out September 14th. And so those are the books that I wanted to highlight today. There's also some events coming up that I wanted to share that our listeners might be interested in. So first up, this weekend, Sunday, September 4th at 7:30 p.m., there is going to be a family-friendly performance by Concrete Temple Theater at the library as part of the Hudson Eye Festival. And they sort of do a mix of theater, puppetry, dance, music. And this particular performance is inspired by Ernest Shackleton's famous tale of perseverance and survival. And I've seen some of the pictures from their work, and it just looks like it'll be really magical. So we hope people will come for that. You can find out more about that performance and how to reserve your seat at the Hudson Eye website, which is thehudsoneye.com. So check that out. That's Sunday, September 4th at the library. For our older readers, perhaps teens and adults, we have an author talk scheduled for later this month on Saturday, September 18th from 12:30 to 2:30. We will have Jared Reinmuth, who is the co-author of Big Black, Stand at Attica. And this is a graphic novel memoir written by Frank Big Black Smith, who was imprisoned at Attica State Prison in 1971, and whose rebellion against the injustices of the prison system remain one of the bloodiest civil rights confrontations in American history. And so this book was recently released. It was nominated for an Eisner Award this past year. And so co-author Jared Reinmuth, who worked with Frank Big Black Smith on this graphic novel memoir, will be coming to the library for an author talk and book signing. And this one, of course, because of COVID precautions, seating is limited, and this is an in-person event. So we encourage everybody to reserve their seat and do so by emailing programs@hudsonarealibrary.org or giving us a call. Again, this is at the Hudson Area Library, Saturday, September 18th at 12:30. And you can find more information on our website as well, hudsonarealibrary.org. And we hope you'll look at the website to learn more about other upcoming programs and events. We have so much going on this fall. One other program that I wanted to let our listeners about, especially our young listeners, is that we are having our first in-person meeting of the Hudson Area Library Tween Teen Advisory Council this September. So anyone interested in working with other youth to take on a leadership role in creating and hosting some of our events and workshops for tweens and teens and participating in community events representing the library can contact youth@hudsonarealibrary.org for information about our next council meeting and what it would take to be a member. The first meeting is going to be Tuesday, September 28th at 4 p.m. So if you think you want to get involved and help, you know, take on a leadership role at the library, we'd be happy to talk with you some more about that, see what we can do. So again, contact youth@hudsonarealibrary.org. You can also find this information on our website. And I think that is it for this week. We hope everyone is enjoying the end of their summer and the start of their fall. For anyone heading back to school, hope it's off to a good start, and we'll be back next week to talk about some more books and to share more information. I look forward to catching up with some of my young friends who I've been missing these past couple weeks. I know some of them will be back next week, so you'll get to hear from somebody a little bit younger than me about the books that they love. But we hope everyone out there has a great week with lots of quality reading time, and happy reading.
Your love poured into my heart. Your love poured into my heart like the water that flows from the pitcher. Holy Spirit penetrating my stone heart like the nail that were dripping through your skin. I was smacked in the face with grace, your righteousness given to me. I got a taste of your goodness. I'm not leaving, I'm coming back for more and more. I spit out the slop I was eating on, always left me dry. My bones have been made alive from you breathing inside. A conversion, conversion. I crossed over the desert land. In your presence is where I stand. Now, conversion, conversion. I was blinded, swimming in my filthy. Now my heart has been turned to righteous light. I was a prisoner living in my prison of ignorance, my mouth full of curses and bitterness. I was chained to my sin. I was loving evil deeds in the dark. I was hugging them tight. Close my eyes. Was clouded with lust for the adulteress, but the ways lead to death. I was on my way to hell, riding on a train first class.
Thank you. You're listening to The Morning Show on WGXC 90.7 FM.
Next, we have an interview from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
We're joined by Anna Kawafala, who is an organizer with actually co-director of Fridays for Future in New York City. She and our family spend the summers up in the Columbia County area. So welcome, Anna, and maybe just tell us a little bit about, you know, what is Fridays for the Future in New York City, and why did you decide to get involved?
Thank you so much for having me. So my name is Anna Kathwala, and I'm one of the co-directors of Fridays for Future in New York City. Fridays for Future in general, the organization was started by Greta Thunberg, inspired by her when she began striking outside of the Swedish Parliament in August 2018. And we are the New York City chapter of that organization, which means that we sort of take her her initiative and go with it in New York City. Because of the COVID pandemic, we haven't been striking in person recently, but before COVID, we were striking in City Hall every day. Every Friday, and trying to push both local New York City government and the federal government of the United States to take more aggressive climate action and keep global temperature rise under 1.5 degrees Celsius. I got involved with Fridays for Future because I'm very, you know, I'm concerned about the climate crisis. It's something that will be affecting my generation, sort of my generation, the generations that follow the most. And we are the ones who will sort of inherit the world that is left behind by the climate crisis. And we're the ones who will have to live with the impact. So it's really important to me that this problem is taken seriously and acted upon now.
Now, you know, we have a new president and replaced Donald Trump, sort of a climate denier. You know, President Biden has certainly done some things, not done enough other things like stop in line three. How does, you know, this Fridays the Future have a particular critique about the present, president and Congress? Are they moving fast enough?
Well, obviously, everything right now is happening much, much better and much faster than it was under the previous president, but we still are not super impressed by the amount of climate action being taken by this current administration. I think that more drastic action needs to be taken and that emissions need to be cut almost completely by 2030 if we want hope of staying beneath 1.5 degrees Celsius temperature rise and of sort of avoiding the most devastating impacts that we would face going above that and also just reaching that number. And I think that we have a really powerful group of especially freshman senators and representatives right now who really are out there to make change and make really positive change. And I think that pushing them and advocating for them to fight as hard as they can for the right policy is really important right now.
Now, Fridays for the Future has called, a national strike. I'm sorry, international strike on September 24th. I have heard that maybe one happened in Troy with some of the students at RPI and Sunrise. You guys are helping the big one, Foley Square, 3 p.m. New York City on September 24th. But, you know, why September 24th and what's your, you know, sort of focus demand for the event?
Yeah, so we're super excited about the strike on September 24th. The date was sort of chosen just because it's a Friday and we're Fridays for Future. So we're striking school on Friday. And our main demands for the strike are, so the hashtag for the strike is Uproot the System. So we really want to sort of get rid of the current narrative that global leaders are trying hard enough, which they aren't, and sort of bring the voices of the most affected people and places to the forefront to really elevate their stories and make sure that they are heard in the climate crisis because they are the ones being affected the most. And we're also advocating with insurance companies so that they stop funding and insuring fossil fuel projects, as well as with food systems, bringing local and healthy food to children who need it. And we're also really trying to push for the passage of the Green New Deal for Public Schools Act, and trying to get that passed soon so that is put into effect. And those are our main demands for the strike. And every strike across the country will have sort of different demands, but those are the ones for New York City. And overall, we're all trying to uplift the voices of the most affected people and places.
Now, right around that time, Congress is supposed to take action on this $3.5 trillion sort of green economic stimulus that the Democrats have put together, particularly Senator Schumer, who's from New York City. And also in November, you know, COP26, last chance COP, you know, all the countries gather. Are you trying to impact upon either of those two events coming up?
Yeah, I mean, I think we're really just trying to impress upon all of the world leaders who are meeting now and all of our senators that this is the time to act. It is, as you said, the last chance. COP27 and onwards are going to be very important in facilitating the decisions that are made this year. But this is the year that people need to, you know, make these concrete choices and really commit to a green future, because if not, we really are, you know, the future will be very perilous and dangerous. So we have demands that are targeting our federal government and our local governments as well. And Fridays for Future internationally is just calling on the global north, especially to really push for climate action and actual climate action, not just promises.
Now, my understanding of Fridays for the Future, you know, there's a lot of different young, you know, climate groups out there, which is great. But Fridays for the Future, I believe he's a little bit more, you know, high school type of age. You know, how do, you know, politicians, elected official, the New York Times, you know, sort of react when, you know, young people who may not even had their first opportunity to vote start telling them, hey, you guys aren't moving quick enough. Get your game together.
Well, unfortunately, I don't find that we're taken very seriously. I find that that high schoolers especially get a lot of news hits that it's, you know, it's shocking sometimes to the public that teenagers would want to take a stand about the climate and want to fight for it. But generally, after the news hits, no one really follows up. No one listens to our opinions. Government leaders generally don't take what we're saying into account because we're not a voting age, because we're not adults. And I think that's also a systemic problem in our country and the world, that youth are not listened to, because I think we have very powerful ideas, and ones that are going to bring change, and we will be the future. We will be the future leaders. And so I think our ideas should be taken into consideration now.
So I'm going to give you a moment here to be the voice of your generation, but, you know, young people, especially, you know, those still in high school or growing up in a world where, you know, climate catastrophe seems to be roaring, you know, right down at us. You know, how do young people at this point, you know, feel about their future?
I think everyone is incredibly worried. I mean, especially this summer, with, you know, hurricanes and flash floods and fires that we've really all been impacted. And I think for some people, it's the first time. For some people, it's been years that they've seen this. Climate change is hitting their lives hard, especially. And, you know, people say, you know, oh, you, I'm so lucky to be old because I won't have to see the climate crisis and see the impacts that it has. And we don't have that luxury. We don't have the ability to, you know, like, we will be alive with the impacts of the climate crisis. And I think everyone, all youth that I know are really scared and worried and, want government leaders to take responsibility and fix this problem.
I did see today that a friend of mine, Bill McKibben, he one of the co-founders of 350.org, starting a new group to help make sure that people over 60 are more active in climate change. I didn't realize there was not enough people under over 60 working on climate change. But, if there are young people out there and they want to get involved both with Fridays for the Future, but climate change in general, how best can they do that?
Well, I think a great step would be to come to the strike on September 24th. Not only will there be one in New York City and one in Troy, but they'll be all over the country and all over the world as well. You can check out the Fridays for Future website. They have a map of all the locations. And try to get plugged in with the strike. You can follow us on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and we're always posting new opportunities for getting involved and sort of joining us.
And did you list, like, you know, what is your best, you know, website or Twitter handle or Instagram in like the last 20 seconds?
On Instagram, we're at fff.nyc. And our website is fridaysforfuturenyc.com.
Well, thank you very much, Anna Kawathala with Fridays for Future NYC, summertime residents of down there in Columbia County. And this has been Mark Dunley for the Hudson Mohawk Radio Network.
That interview was from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org. Baby, I believe, 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 baby, I believ
back before.